Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Now, a really interesting story, which if you are a regular reader of the Spur Corporation annual reports, you'd be familiar with. And as you're probably not, let me tell you a little bit about it. SARS and Spur have been at loggerheads over the restaurant group's 48 million rand share scheme incentive for senior management, which dates all the way back to 2005. Now, Spur has lost a really long-running tax battle in the Supreme Court of Appeal. It says it's still taking legal advice as to whether or not to approach the Constitutional Court. We invited Spur to talk about this. They declined. So let's get a professional view this evening from Director in the Tax and Exchange Control Practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr, and that is Jerome Brink on the line to us from Johannesburg. Why have SARS and Spur been fighting over this for so long, Jerome?
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me on the show. I think, as you know, things sometimes take long to get to the courts. And it's actually been, there's actually been now three judgments on this case. And it was initially in the tax court in Cape Town with one judge. And in that court, the judge actually found in favor of Spur. That was then appealed by SARS, and it went to a full bench of the Western Cape High Court, which is obviously three judges, and the majority, which is two out of the three judges, ruled in favor of the taxpayer again, and there was one dissenting judgment, so it was 2-1, and SARS then appealed that judgment to the SCA, the Supreme Court of Appeal, which was then handed down last week, where all five judges, normally the five judges that sit on the SCA bench, ruled in favor of SARS and actually overturned the lower court's decisions. So it has been through quite a few courts in the sense, and that's probably why it has taken some time.
Okay, got you on that particular point. Business Day is saying they've spoken to multiple lawyers who say there's long-standing concern about the quality of tax judgments at the appeal courts. So clearly the lawyers like what the tax court is doing, what the high courts are doing, they seem quite satisfied there. They're worried about a lack of tax knowledge at the Supreme Court. And judges, I suppose, can't be experts in everything. But is there a flaw in the Supreme Court judgment?
Bruce, it's early days, but the key issue that it comes down to really is these share incentive schemes have been designed, on the one hand, it's generally seen as salary in the hands of the employees, and often employer companies then want to get their income tax deduction in their hands. And so a lot of these schemes have been devised in the sense that to incentivize employer companies from doing these types of schemes and incentivizing employees to promote kind of the growth of the company, and they also get the income tax deduction. And so that was really the key issue in this case, and in particular the fundamental issue, so the requirement of Section 11A that was really in dispute was whether the contribution was in the production of income. And fundamentally, the key issue or the key kind of factor that one needs to consider in that respect is whether the expenditure is closely linked to the income that is being earned. And in this case, the SCA found that it wasn't. And I think the main reason why it did is in the sense that it was seen to be not necessarily directly benefiting the employee as opposed to the contribution kind of remaining within the group. And so, yes, there was probably a connection between the expenditure or the capital contribution and the benefits to the employees and the incentivizing of the employees, but that wasn't close enough, and it was maybe an indirect benefit. And so it does sort of align with a lot of what the case law and the principles on this subject matter in fact say.
I mean, this is obviously very technical, and this is manna from heaven for tax lawyers like yourself. When we look at this, I mean, the Americans have got something called a statute of limitations, and that means you can't be tried for something, or you can't, you can't be challenged legally for something after a certain period of time. How far can SARS go back in its disputes? I mean, once you lose a case once and twice on something that happened in 2005, how long can you keep appealing for?
So generally, the statute of limitations from an income tax perspective is 3 years. So that's 3 years from the date of your original assessment. And, of course, that creates certainty or an equilibrium between taxpayers and SARS in the sense that, you need some type of certainty. But there are specific rules that where SARS can potentially raise an assessment outside those 3 years, provided there are certain circumstances that exist.
Okay, so I mean, there's so much sort of circumstance in each and every case. We assume that SARS has made it clear to the courts that this is highly relevant that this particular matter be dealt with, because SARS, as in my experience anyway, doesn't pursue cases endlessly unless it believes it's going to win these things. I mean, they have battled taxpayers for years, but with a very clear conviction of a victory in sight. They must be feeling fairly confident that they can convince the Constitutional Court, if this goes there, that they are in the right on this very complicated matter.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there's been quite a few cases now in the SEA and the Constitutional Court, and SARS has been generally successful in most of them. So at the moment, yes, they're certainly doing something right in the sense of cases that do go to court. Obviously, if there was a case that they probably thought they might not be successful, then, you know, they probably wouldn't go to court because that would create a precedent that wouldn't necessarily help them. At the moment, the policy in terms of what goes to court or not is certainly working in their favour.
And the incentive also is for SARS to push back quite strongly on this, because they've already had a payment from Spur. Spur has had to hand over several million rand on the pay now, argue later scheme, where if you dispute something with SARS, they said, that's fine, you're welcome to dispute it, but pay now, and then we'll argue. And they've got the law on their side on that particular front. So the longer this is drawn out for, whether SARS wins or loses, kind of doesn't really matter to them.
That's correct, Bruce. So that is in terms of the pay now, argue later. So essentially what the rule says is, you know, you have to pay the amount now, unless and you can still dispute it, and you can dispute it all the way to the Constitutional Court if you'd like. But you must pay it. Now, there are circumstances where taxpayers can request suspension of that debt and in the interim while the dispute is being resolved. But there are obviously quite strict factors and financial factors that you need to prove to SARS for them to grant you that suspension. But paying the amount is not in any way an admittance of fault on your part, and you can carry on disputing it. But of course, if you don't pay it, and you ultimately lose, then you will be charged with interest on the tax debt in that interim period. Yeah.
No, fair enough. So it's almost like an insurance policy, I suppose, against being found to have been on the wrong side of the law. How important a case is this one, Jerome? Is it just a curiosity, or are there some important principles at stake here?
Yeah, it's a good question, Bruce. I think when you first see it, you know, in the cold, hard light of day, I think a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of debate out there, and it's, you know, is this going to sort of end share incentive schemes as we know it, which is such an important part to many businesses. And in the sense that, you know, incentivizes employees, aligns their interests to shareholders, et cetera, and promotes growth, you know, more longer term growth of the company. But I think the important thing and the key takeaway from this is that, you know, in any of these tax cases, there are principles, but a key issue is really the facts, and that there are different facts and there are different types of mechanisms to sort of, you know, create share incentive schemes. And this particular case had a very specific way or mechanism, funding mechanism in terms of how it was created and structured. And that was really what the court focused on in terms of ultimately disallowing the deduction. So while it obviously builds on the precedent in this area, I think it's important to keep in mind that really it is a facts and circumstances based test, and everyone should obviously have a look at their current schemes or proposed schemes to sort of have a look in terms of how that compares and how that integrates into what the tax court, I mean the Supreme Court of Appeal, has said. So it certainly is something where people should certainly sort of sit up and say, hang on, let's have a look at our current arrangements and make sure that we don't fall foul of what the SEA said. But important to bear in mind that it really is a fact and circumstances test, and this one did have specific facts and circumstances that made it different to what often happens in practice.
I mean, just listening to you, Jerome, and you are speaking, you are using English words, but this world of tax is so infernally complicated. Has it become more complicated over the years? Am I imagining it? It just feels like there's so many more ifs, buts, and maybes than perhaps, you know, 20 years ago when the tax system was simplified in the early stages of our democracy. It seems to have recluttered and recomplicated itself.
Yeah, look, I mean, there was always that question of whether they wanted to rewrite the entire tax act and try and make it simpler. But unfortunately, you know, with all things where there's a lot, you know, the majority of taxpayers are compliant and doing the right thing, there's a lot of taxpayers that aren't. And I think that's why there's often complexity in tax laws, in that there's often an ongoing amendments and changes and things to kind of close all those different loopholes that people are taking advantage of. And I think that kind of builds on each other and makes it more complicated in the long term.
Thank you, Jerome Brink, Director in the Tax and Exchange Control Practice at Cliff Dekker-Hoffmeyer.